It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This is the Sandler Training Hour. Each week we bring you Sandler trainers from all over the continent, in fact, all over the world. They share their expertise and insights into things related to business development, management, customer service, change, communication, things that are really germane not only to helping you grow an effective business, but also for helping you develop an effective personal communication life. My guest today is Vince Esposito. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Happy to be here. Really excited about it.
Vince is from Louisville, Kentucky. An easily ignored step in the Sandler process is the post-sell step. And you've been doing some work with your team on developing a more prominent structure around that post-sell step. So what is post-sell involve, and how are you using it?
Thanks, Jim. I mean, I didn't even tell you, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but a little background. I was in the insurance industry, commercial insurance industry. In the commercial insurance industry, the post-sell step was really what caught my eye or caught my attention with Sandler. Because in the insurance industry, especially commercial, when you're calling on larger accounts to handle their workers' comp and general liability, every business has to have insurance. You know, very rare, unless it's a startup, are you going to be talking to someone that doesn't have any insurance. So with that comes an incumbent. And that was my first exposure because I hadn't sold insurance before. I had been in the energy industry, and it wasn't quite the same way because a lot of people were new to energy because it was a new field and people had the opportunity to buy energy from somewhere other than utility, so it was a new thing. And when I got a commercial insurance, the first deal that I signed was about 2 hours away from Louisville in western Kentucky. And it was an automotive casting company for the automotive industry. And a pretty sizable account. And I had a check for a $40,000 deposit
wow.
in my pocket driving back to Louisville. And this was before cell phones were big, Jim. This is, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, they were around, but they weren't as prevalent. And literally, when I got back to my office in Louisville, I found a voicemail from the buyer saying, don't cash that check. And I was kind of dumbfounded. What do you mean, don't cash the check?
Right.
And I called him back, and that's when he proceeded to tell me that he had called the incumbent to let him know that he was switching, and the incumbent was very appreciative and said, I want to come over and make sure it's a smooth transition. And before he left, he had kept the business. And I learned, you know, at that point that prior to that, and I don't know who's going to be listening to this, but I think a lot of folks that start a sales think, you know, once the signature is on the contract, if there's no money to be grabbed, you know, taken at the time, you run before the ink is dry. And I think a lot of sales managers over the years kind of push that. You know, you get them to say yes, you take it and run. But this really gave me the opportunity to stand back and say, there's a different way to do this. And when I really got into the Sandler system and the post-sale step that comes at the end is let's have a conversation as to what we're doing, why we're doing it, what are the steps to, you know, or deadlines that we need to hit to make this effective, and then talk about if there's any unsettled feelings at that point. As I was young in this, I thought, well, I don't want to reopen the sale and have to sell it again. But the reality is that those folks are going to have those conversations with people internally, an incumbent or a competitor without you. And your competitor or incumbent doesn't all of a sudden, when they hear, oh, you're going with Vince, you're not going to be all of a sudden on their Christmas card list to get a card to say, hey, thanks for stealing that customer from me.
That is so true.
And just like anybody that's listening, when you get that call, what are you going to try and do? You're going to fight with every breath that you can to keep that account.
Yeah, I don't want to let it go. It was hard enough getting business. I sure don't want to let it go if I can help it.
You know, they work hard to win this business. They're not going to let it go easily.
Right.
And then depending on the type of product or service that you're selling, there are some pretty specific type of expectations and or deadlines or contractual obligations that have to be walked through.
Right.
For instance, in the insurance industry, as an example, you know, I work with some large trucking outfits. They need that ID card before the expiration date. So
yeah.
If it expires on October 1, I can't get them the card on October 2 because they get pulled over. That's a pretty good font. So there has to be some time for transition. The incumbents will use that to say, well, you know, when you make that transition, that's when mistakes. You want to have that discussion. And I think it really comes down to a couple things, as David Tamer said. There's three things that he talks about. Preventing the loss of sale from either the incumbent or a competitor. And then there's that old psychological thing called buyer's remorse. And Jim, when was the last time you made a purchase and maybe you rethought it because of a myriad of reasons?
Right. And it's almost every sale. There's some version of feeling like, did I really make the right decision here? Could I have gotten a better deal? Should I have shopped around?
Exactly. And I think in today's world with information so much more prevalent, that's even more intense, that feeling, because how many times you make that decision and all of a sudden something catches your eye, they see something else, some information on the internet says, hey, did you look at this option?
So the post-sale step is designed to help the clients think through the action they're taking so that if they are going to back out, it happens now?
And that sounds counterintuitive, right? But let's talk about that. I mean, you know, the reality is they have to have that conversation with their folks internally and the incumbent or the competition. No one's just going to say, oh, that's great. They're going to look for justification. And if you can help coach them, that first insurance deal I sold, I lost down in Western Kentucky. Fast forward to about 2 months later when I win another deal here locally, and I have been through some Sandler training on post-sale, and I understand how that discussion, and I coach the buyer to say, hey, Bob, I appreciate you having the faith to do business with us. I really believe that the program we've outlined makes a lot of sense, but talk about that for a second and see if there's anything that maybe I've overlooked, or are we okay to hit the deadlines that we need to have? We started to have that discussion. It was very open and honest. And then I said, you know, Bob, at some point you're going to have to call your current agent and let him know that you've made this decision. And I told him, I said, you know, he's not going to send me a Christmas card. He chuckled.
Right.
And he said, no, but he'll understand. I said, yeah, he'll understand, but he'll want to come in and talk with you to make sure it's a smooth transition, which I think makes sense. But when he does that, he's also going to try and figure out if he can keep the business. And obviously, you know, I've earned your business. I want to keep working with you. But if there's any reason that you can see that you'd want to stay where you're at for, you know, some relationship that I'm unaware of or something we didn't talk about, let's talk about that now. And actually, he got a little defensive. No, I've made my decision. I said, okay, that's good. I wasn't trying to challenge. I just want to make sure we put it on the table. Fast forward a couple of days, and he calls me up, and he's chuckling. He goes, he did exactly what you said he would do. He offered to come in to talk with me to make sure it was a smooth transition. And I told him, well, there was no need for that. I had that all figured out. And then he started getting angry. And by the end of the conversation, I hung up on him because he was yelling at me. And the point that I took from that was instead of running away from that, you know, 800-pound gorilla that's going to be out there, you know, we talk a lot about the psychological effect of the sale. And I think, as I said, a lot of salespeople are trained when somebody says yes, you take that and run. And you know, Jim, I don't know, but I think the other side of that, you know, when you're looking at different companies to insure, you have a group of underwriters that are looking at several different opportunities. You know, when they're looking at that, they want to look at the best opportunities, the ones that have the best chance of winning. And when they find one, they're going to put their effort in.
Right.
So what I learned on that first deal was when I lost that, I lost a lot of credibility internally with underwriters, where my lifeblood going forward. So I had to do a lot of relationship building with them to get them to trust me again.
Very counterintuitive process. My guest today is Vince Esposito. Vince is in Louisville, Kentucky. Vince, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
My email is vesposito, E-S-P-O-S-I-T-O, at Sandler.com, or my telephone number, my office number is 502-454-5454.
Awesome.
And you can also check out my website at esposito.sandler.com.
Okay, we're going to be back with the second installment of our conversation with Vince Esposito just after this break. If you're interested in more information from us here locally, my name is Jim Stevens. Our number is area code 208-429-9275, or we're on the web at crossroads.com. www.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this.
Have you experienced sharing your expertise in hopes of selling someone on your firm only to realize that you've been doing unpaid consulting? Buyers have a very sophisticated system for getting information. You need an even more sophisticated system to grow your business.
I have faith in the Sandler system. Sometimes it seems counter to what my instincts would tell me to do. I go out there, I try it, and it works.
That's Bethany Brediger with Sonatrol Pacific. She leveraged hard work and the Sandler training system to change her career.
Income would be the most tangible result. I have quadrupled the monthly that I've been doing for the company. When I started, that amount has quadrupled. I have more than doubled my income. Pretty drastic results, I would say.
Stop unpaid consulting now. Sandler training is not a quick fix. It's long-term reinforcement for professional development. Call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.
And welcome to Behind the Business. My guest today is Larry Downs. Larry is a name that you probably have heard of if you've ever been to an estate sale auction. Larry does. You must have a huge percentage of the market share, do you, Larry?
We have our good fair share of it. Yeah. There's a couple of us that are pretty dominant in the area. So we're very blessed. So, we're always busy.
So we're sure glad to have you as a guest on the show. Tell us about the auction. Give us an overview of what you do for your clients.
The biggest thing we do is to provide a service to make your life simpler in a transition time. Your family making a change, whether it be through death, care center for mom and dad, or just a change in occupation where you're moving out of the state. And we can come in and make that transition much simpler by offering you a service to take care of everything from the very beginning to the very end and make it a very clean transition.
And I'm guessing that just starts with an interview.
It does, yeah. I typically go out to the site, the home, or the business, whatever it might be. I love going out and meeting people and just introducing myself and our services that we've done for 37 years. I really try to provide an avenue that they might not even known about and can make it so much easier.
Give us the advantage of using an auction as opposed to a traditional method. I mean, off of the top of my head, one advantage is a yard sale. Give me a break. That's got to be a horrible amount of work.
It is, absolutely. You know, totally a different game. We're a professional business. We're going to create a market. We're going to create income for your items. A bidding, you know, people are going to come and they're going to battle over your items. Yeah. And a lot of times we see that magnifying to numbers you wouldn't even believe.
You'd never get at a yard sale.
Never.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Plus, a yard sale, you know, is the mentality to come and just make cheap offers. You're going to spend 2 or 3 days and you're still going to have half of the stuff left over. My auction company is going to come in. We're going to have a 1 day sale. And it's all done that afternoon. Everything's gone. You don't have to worry about negotiations. It's just very simple.
As the estate owner, it's handled. I delegate to you, and you expedite.
Absolutely. I tell a lot of families, you know, it's as simple as you give me the front door key. I'll take care of your whole place, and then I'll send you a check. That really simplifies a lot of work. That's really how easy it is. And we'll do everything for you from the advertising to the marketing to the cleaning to preparing for the day of the auction to the auction itself and then all the bookkeeping afterwards.
Wow, that is terrific. That is a tremendous amount of work. I'm assuming your real estate company also is involved in that because you can even help them sell the house.
That's right. Yeah, we'll sell the property. We have a full real estate team, a broker. I have a wonderful broker. Chet Pipkin has been in the business for over 30 years. Really provides a good base for us for our Downs Realty. We also have, I think now up to around 15 agents that work in the traditional real estate world. So we offer both. We don't have to go through the auction. The auction just brings a closure to the estate.
Yeah. Great. When we get back for the next segment, I'm going to want to hear more about your real estate company. My name's Jim Stevens. Larry, give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
Yeah, the best number is 208-467-1712 or at downsauction.com.
All right, we'll be back with the next segment of the Sandler Training Hour, and we're going to have Larry back to talk about his real estate firm in just a minute here. We'll be back after this.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.
And welcome to the Sandler Training Hour. My guest today is Vince Esposito. We've been talking about one of the steps in the Sandler system called the post-sell step. And it's at the very end of the sales call, so it's not uncommon to maybe brush over it, not spend as much time on it, think that you don't have to worry about it. But Vince gave us a very great example of how this is one of those steps that if you neglect it, it can cost you the sale. If I do have a client who backs out, there's some residual damage that I'm going to have to control probably within my own organization.
All the folks that are listening, they know that there's that angst between sales and service. I don't care what industry you're in. The service people think sales folks are out on the golf course all the time and not doing any work, and the sales people think the service people are inside playing computer games and not doing any work.
Right.
But the reality is that they both need each other.
Right.
In today's world, resources are stretched thin. And so usually when companies are looking at opportunities, they have to be pretty stringent on which ones they're going to do because they want to make sure they're profitable. And when you have service people that have to deliver your product, you're kind of like the boy who cried wolf, and you go to them with this great deal and it turns out not being a great deal, or you lose it after you say you have it. That's a huge hit to your credibility internally.
Yeah, I think anybody who's in a selling role that has to involve others in the sales process, like, for example, construction or remodeling, you're going to involve a designer. Maybe there's an estimator. If you're in another service industry, there might be technicians or engineers that are responsible for helping you come up with the scope of work and specifications. If you're, like you said, one of those people who cry, the boy who cries wolf, you're taking their time and it's not turning into profit for the company, it doesn't take long before your deals get shuffled to the bottom of the pile and you're not considered important.
And, you know, we don't like to talk about that, but that's the reality because resources are limited. And it's not fair, you know, to treat your resources with that type of disregard. In the Sandler system, we have different checks and balances from upfront contracts to really understanding the pain and the budget. But that last step, that post-sell, we can kind of bring that back up and make sure we didn't miss anything and that this is really going to go straight forward. Sales is not rocket science. But what it is discipline, courage, and self-awareness. And the courage isn't 24/7, but it's courage in spots. You know, when you have an issue that you have to address, you can't walk away from it. Okay, after you said yes, I'm going to kind of question a little bit just to make sure that you still want to do business with me. That kind of went against the grain of, you know, how I was taught in those childhood scripts. When someone said something, that's what they were going to do.
In my experience, I was really good in traditional selling, and I bought the Sandler franchise in 1999 here in Boise. I owned a remodeling company, and I bought the franchise because I knew we were doing way too much unpaid consulting, and I was having too many projects that ended up, we'd spend a tremendous amount of time in design and scope development, and it'd go nowhere. And the first time I heard this concept of the post-sell, I remember the call that I was on. It was, and the goal, just to put it in a context, is to bring up something that the prospect early on had concerns about and make sure those concerns weren't strong enough to kill the sale. So I was in a project at a residential home, and I said to the client, I said, you know, Jack, when you invited me in originally, bear in mind, I was so nervous, I could hardly breathe. My hands were sweaty. I was so nervous to even say this, but I said, Jack, one of your concerns was you didn't want to overbuild for the neighborhood. Your home is roughly worth it, $250,000, and we're talking about spending another $250,000 on it, and I'm just afraid we have been successful at overbuilding for your neighborhood. Are you sure you want to go forward with this? And the response just floored me. He looked at me and he said, Jim, you let me spend my money the way I want to spend it. I raised my kids here and I'm going to raise my grandkids here. And it was just like, I wanted to jump out of my chair and say, it works, it works. I was so nervous bringing that up because everything in me said, get the check and run praying it clears in the bank.
But afterwards, it's empowering to feel that, man, that was a tough discussion, but I brought it up. Yeah, maybe he got a little, you know, his back stood up a little bit, the hair on his back, but it was a great discussion, and you move forward with the deal, and everybody was happy.
And frankly, that's a move that a trusted advisor will do. They're going to make sure, do you want to move forward, and are you sure it's in your best advantage to do so right now?
You know, Jim, that's a great point, that, you know, we want to set ourselves apart. Truly, a trusted advisor is the person who's going to throw up the kind of devil's advocate. Is this really what we need to do here? Otherwise, you're just a salesman trying to push the deal.
That's right.
Right?
We talked a little bit, Vince, about the mindset. Mm-hmm. You and I have both been through this, so we've had to pluck up the courage to try it, see that it works. What advice do you give the listeners and how to get your head in a safe place so that you're willing to take a risk like this?
You know, that's a great question. And I can't speak for everybody, but Jim, you know, with the Sandler system, we believe that the behaviors are going to help the attitude and the technique, and really just trying to set those key behaviors that when this comes up, this is what I'm going to do, and have that discussion outside of the sales interaction and say, all right, when I get to the point where we're ready to sign the paperwork, I'm going to bring back up an overview of the sale and discuss the different situations or options, or as you said earlier, anything that seemed to be a little bit different than what we thought the path we were going on.
Yeah.
And we're going to bring that up. And it's just saying, okay, I'm going to do that 3 times this week. And then following through those behaviors, and I know you do it and some other Sandler trainers do it, journal to see how you felt about that.
It's understanding my own self-limitations that will help me face the fear and do it anyway. You mentioned in the first segment about sales is a matter of discipline, courage, and self-awareness. And I don't have to be courageous 100% of the time. I just need that 5 seconds of courage that says, so Vince, does it make sense for us to talk just a little bit about any reason you may have in not moving forward?
You said, Jim, and I was the same way. That first time you try it, you're going to have butterflies and be nervous, and that's a good thing because it means that you're aware that this is different than what you've done in the past.
Give your contact information, Vince, so that if there's anybody out there that would like to reach out to you personally, they have the means to do so.
Phone number 502-454-5454 and email vesposito@sandler.com.
All right. We're going to be back with the final segment of Vince Esposito after our Entrepreneur Radio interlude. In this segment of the program, we listen to the stories of local and regional entrepreneurs. We get to hear how they started their business, what are some of the challenges they faced, and through this, we get to learn from other people's successes and failures. If you happen to know somebody who'd be a good candidate for this segment of the program, please give me a call. I'm Jim Stevens, and my phone number is 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. 9275, or you can reach me on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this.
As a business owner or manager, do you have that gnawing feeling in your gut that says something's just not right? It's not uncommon to be so immersed in the daily battle that you're unaware of the small changes you could make that would produce a significant return on investment. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. We are a training and consulting firm who specialize in helping businesses increase gross and net profit, cash flow, and referrals generated from stellar customer service. Listen to my friend and client, Brandon Wright, the owner of Ultra Clean, share his experience with Sandler Training.
I did $1.7 million when I met you, had 26 employees, and after my coaching with you, we grew another million with 16 employees. So 10 less employees, we did another million. So what does that tell you? It means I was doing something wrong.
If you're courageous enough to face what you may not know that could hurt you, give me a call. Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com.
Welcome back to the second segment of Behind the Business. My guest today is Larry Downs. Larry Downs is a third generation entrepreneur. Second generation. Yeah. Downs Auction is the primary brainchild of your dad, and then you've branched off into real estate. Tell the story about when did you do that and what prompted you to expand to include real estate in your offerings.
Yeah, absolutely. Dad and I had always sold real estate as part of the company, but it wasn't the main focus. When my wife and I bought the company in 2001, I wanted that to be the main focus. I was working with another agency at the time. As our business got bigger and bigger, I wanted to have my own brokerage. So in 2009, we started Downs Realty and have expanded it into Oregon. We have an office out of Oregon as well.
Oh, really? Awesome.
And so we have our license in Oregon. Oregon has different laws to even sell real estate in Oregon. As an auctioneer, you have to be a real estate agent. So they have some few different things we had to follow, and so now we've got agents over there, kind of taking that eastern Oregon side as well as the southwest Idaho side.
And what's the biggest challenge you've had since adding that? I mean, do you have any regrets? Do you think, wow, why did I decide to do this?
Oh, no, not at all. It's been the best thing we've done. We opened up a brand new office in downtown Eagle, handles the real estate side. The best thing about it is the real estate is such an unknown, and the auction doesn't have any limitations. So there's no price at the auctions, and so we see a lot of the properties bring market plus prices. And so it's not a means of selling it for less. A lot of times we see prices that go much higher. Recently, we sold a property down in Emmett for a family. Their dad had passed away. A doctor out of Washington, a son, hired us to sell his dad's estate. We sold that property for well over $100,000 more than value. Two people got hooked up and just kept, you know, the bidding going. They wanted it. And that's the exciting part about our auction company, is that is the unknown that an auction can drive.
Now, your real estate company, it sounds like the way you've structured it, your daughter, is she running the real estate side?
Actually, my wife, Debbie.
Oh, your wife, Debbie. Okay.
Runs the auction or the real estate business down in Eagle, and then Summer works there as well. We have lots of agents that work out of that office and out of their homes in today's world of teams and different ways of real estate. We've got a great core of real estate agents, a lot of years and a lot of history of very professional.
And you've got a full-time broker on staff?
I have a full-time broker, yep, that runs the company as well on the real estate side.
And your son's involved in your auction business.
Right, yep. Dustin is also a real estate agent in Idaho.
Oh.
Carries his license so he can do showings and help us with the real estate side of things, but also more in the realm of taking care of the auction side.
So when we get back, I want to hear a little bit more about being a family business. We're one, so I'd like to hear your perspective. Give your contact information, Larry, so if anybody out there is interested, they could give you a call.
Absolutely. 208-467-1712 is the main office, and you can always reach us at downsauction.com.
Terrific. We'll be back with a little more of the Sandler Training Hour after this message.
Do you realize that for every customer complaint you receive, 26 of your customers remain silent, though they are unhappy? 82% of customers who stop using your services do so because of a single negative experience. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Our strategic customer care program provides an interactive forum for your employees to learn the fundamentals of dealing with difficult clients, increasing referrals, developing prospecting awareness, and increasing your revenue by upselling and cross-selling. Give your frontline team the tools needed to deliver an exceptional customer service experience. 4 months, an hour and a half each week, and your frontline staff will be equipped to help you gain market share and destroy your competition. Enroll today by contacting us at area code 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Or reach us on the web at www.crossroads.sandler.com. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Our initial no-cost analysis will help you see the four steps required to achieve success. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.
And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. This segment of our program, we interview local entrepreneurs and we get to hear the story of how they have built their business, what their business is about, and the things that they are passionate about regarding business. My guest today is Barbara Cagini. She is an accountant and has her own practice right here in Boise. Welcome, Barbara. Glad to have you.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much.
So tell us a little bit about your business. Start with what got you into accounting.
What got me into accounting was a high school bookkeeping class that I took as an elective because I needed to fill an hour. And I thought, this is so easy. You mean people pay you to do this?
Oh, really?
And so I thought, okay, I'm going to go to college and learn this because it's just so easy.
You're passionate about this business because one of the things I understand you do is you really help educate your clients. So talk to us about the typical business owner. What is it that they need to know about their business to be successful in managing it by the numbers?
Well, a lot of the things that I see when I'm working with small business owners, they're usually ma and pa kind of shops where that doesn't mean necessarily small. That just means that the owner and the business are very close to each other.
Right.
And what I normally see is that the numbers are put to the side and they don't really use them to help them grow the business. They use marketing tools. They have salespeople. They have storefronts. They have a lot of different things, but they don't use the numbers because they don't understand them. When you do use the numbers, then it helps you to make those little adjustments that you need in your business so that you can thrive. It gives you goals to shoot for. It gives you decisions become much easier because you know which way you want to go based on numbers, not just based on, oh, it sounds like a good idea.
And it's so critical. If you've ever applied for a loan as a business owner, you know that there are certain metrics that a bank is going to look at to see how well you're doing. Things like a quick ratio or those type of things. And I think by and large, the majority of small business owners don't really know what those ratios might tell a business. So what advice do you give to a small business owner regarding understanding their numbers and the ratios the way a bank might look at them?
One thing that I do work with people a lot, I always tell them that you want a sexy balance sheet. You want a really sexy balance sheet. And what that means is you have lots of assets and low liabilities. And in starting out a business, that sometimes seems impossible, but that's where the overall accounting process and looking at your numbers comes from, is it's a process. So you knock out a little bit every year until you get to that point where your business is very stable and anybody wants to give you money.
So what are the top two or three things you think make a balance sheet sexy?
One of the things that I guess a lot of business owners don't understand is the interaction between the balance sheet and the income statement.
Right.
The income statement doesn't show you your cash flow. That's a whole nother subject.
Right.
And that's a very integral part of everything, too. So it all really goes together. The balance sheet and the income statement, you can't look at them separately because they are so interactive. Having a budget so that you know how much you're spending, so that you're not overspending. Know where your break-even points are so that you know how to price your product well.
Right.
And all of those things help you to have that profit so that you can reduce any debt and you can become your own banker. You know, start a savings account in your business. Businesses are allowed to have savings accounts. It's okay.
It's notorious in most small business owners that they treat the company almost like a cookie jar and they take all the money out of it, leaving really no retained earnings. What kind of impact does that have down the road?
Well, that can have a very bad impact, and it can have a bad impact tax-wise if you're an S corporation. That's one of the things I see people don't understand, basis, and taking too much money out can actually create taxable income you weren't intending to create. The other part that I work with a lot of small owners with is the personal side. Because if you have a dysfunctional personal financial situation, it's going to bleed into a closely held business.
Yes.
Vice versa. So it's really important for small business owners to not only get their business budget and their business finances together, but you want the same sexy balance sheet and the same things over on your personal side.
I think what happens many times is it's a bust or boom, and when things are booming, you never think it's going to go down, and then when they do tank, it's like, uh-oh, I was not prepared for this.
Well, in the last downturn that we finally, I think, come partway out of, that's when you determined which businesses were well-run and which businesses were not well-run. Because the well-run businesses were able to sustain the downturn and come out and be the only guys out there when it started coming up again. Right. And then, of course, everybody joins back into the market. It's really a very telling story when there's a downturn. Because if you have not managed your business well, you will not survive it.
You'll not make it.
No,
and
you won't.
I think many companies maybe are already going out of business, but they don't know it because they're living off of cash flow.
Yes. Yes.
So talk to us about what are the warning signs that you're pilfering cash flow and you've got a serious problem you need to take a look at.
I think some of the warning signs with cash flow are, one, liabilities keep increasing. If your liabilities keep increasing, that's because you're spending everything you have and you're having to go out and find more money to sustain what's going on.
And by liabilities, you mean?
I mean debt, credit card debt, bank loans, personal monies that you put in, line of credit, all of those things, if those keep increasing, then there is a definite cash flow problem,
right?
Because you're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, which is never a good thing. You should always be able to put something in savings every month in your business and in your personal world.
Coming up with a plan, let's pretend you've got a listener out there who's thinking, yeah, guilty as charged. What would you recommend the first two or three actions they take to right their financial ship?
The first thing I would do is I would have them go to their accountant, if they have one, or find a good CPA. Really sit down with them and ask them to help them with understanding their financial statements. Or you can go to a class. There's lots of classes that are available out there through BSU or CWI. And just take some classes on accounting and how a balance sheet and income statement work. There's business management classes. Of course, you can call me.
Right. Absolutely.
But it's about getting educated. You really need to become educated. And apart from being educated, everybody pretty much understands what to do with a budget. You need to start looking at where your numbers really are.
I feel like there's a big disconnect between many accountants and their clients, because if we have a prospect come in, one of the things we're doing is we're looking at how money flows through their business so that we can find areas to help them make more and keep more. In that process, we're asking questions of business owners about their finances, and we get a lot of deer in the headlights. And I'm often thinking, if you have a CPA, which you said you do, they're not serving you. So how is it that somebody can be in a position of helping someone from a financial accountability and not give them the tools to understand what they're doing?
Well, that's why I designed my business the way I did, was because I saw that lack in the CPA world. I was coming across a lot of small businesses that didn't understand. I'm not sure exactly why that has happened in our industry, but that is something that I have definitely pushed to the forefront of what I do, is helping business owners to understand their numbers and how to use them to grow their business. I think all CPAs can do it.
Right.
I don't know if it's a matter of you have to ask them.
And plus, I think from a CPA's perspective, it takes time.
It does.
And maybe they haven't built their business structure to recoup the time. If they're only being paid for basic CPA tax purposes, maybe they need to change their model. So let's pretend there's a listener out there who's saying, gee, I really need somebody who understands and can talk finances on my level. Why don't you give them your contact information?
My phone number is 949-1519. And you can also email me at bdeecugini@msn.com.
Barbara Cugini, thank you so much for being on our program today. And listeners, if you are in that situation where you're looking for somebody to help you really understand how money runs through your business and how to manage it instead of having your money manage you in a dysfunctional way, reach out to Barbara. Give your phone number one more time, Barbara.
It's 949-1519.
And we're going to be back with the next installment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training.
With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Our initial no-cost analysis will help you see the 4 steps required to achieve success. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. And welcome to Behind the Business. My guest today has been Larry Downs. Larry is a second-generation auctioneer. Larry, you started with your dad in the late 70s, is that right?
Yeah, 1979, right when I was ending high school and went into college. Dad had started the company, so I grew up in the second-hand business with my grandparents. And then my dad took over that and started the auction company to service people that needed help. All of my younger years, that's what we did, is auctions.
So you worked with your dad from the late 70s all the way to the time you bought the business in early 2000.
Yeah, we did. You know, with any family business, it always has its interesting moments. And obviously, my dad is a very talented man, very successful. And I'm glad I had that backing that he gave me. We didn't always see eye to eye,
right,
like any family business, and I had my visions and my ideas. Unfortunately, my dad had got sick in the late 90s, and I kind of had been running the company a little bit while he was getting well. Obviously, he's great now. He's fine, but kind of made a transition point.
Kind of forced the issue.
And so in 2001, my wife and I bought the company and took over from there.
So what advice would you give to our listeners about being in business with your wife, with your kids, with your dad?
Wow, that's a good question. I definitely have talked about it now that my kids are working for me, and I realize I could have been way different with my dad. I think a lot of people that know the Downses were all very strong people and have our very strong opinions. I think sometimes we could soften that up. I certainly could have with my dad.
You could have listened a little more.
Listened a little bit better. He instilled a lot of good things in me that I use today.
Yeah.
I think I've taken a lot of that on my own and gone the next chapter. So I share that with my children now to make it to where we can have a little easier coexistence in the working field.
So if you're that strong personality, how do you make sure you're not being too controlling or bossy of your spouse or your children?
Well, I married well, and so Debbie is wonderful, and she definitely keeps me in check. So we're a family that four kids, been married 28 years. We love our kids. We play with them. We not only work together, but after work we are snowmobiling or boating or hunting or we are always together. Very proud of our close family. But there's times when, you know, we need a little break.
Yeah, right. You have to throttle it back and say, okay, I'll let them do it their way.
Yeah. there are those times.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. Well, Larry, thank you for being a guest today. Give your contact information in case there's somebody who would like to reach out to you.
You bet. And thank you for having me today.
You're welcome.
But DownsAuction.com. You can come and see us there at the website. There's all kinds of information there. Or give us a call at 208-467-1712.
Larry Downs, thank you so much for being on the program. We're going to be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this.
As a sales manager, you do what it takes to motivate your team, like having regular sales meetings and providing coaching and training when needed. But as a sales manager, how do you improve your performance? Sandler Sales Training has 6 free suggestions for you to become a more effective manager. Just visit crossroads.sandler.com for your free download. Attitude, behavior, and becoming a resource are just a few of the areas where you may improve your skills as a manager, a mentor, and a motivator. Sandler Sales Training invites you to grab these 6 free tips today at crossroads.sandler.com. You can use these suggestions to examine your attitudes and actions, which can help you interact better with your sales team and improve their performance. Become a better leader today. Again, that's crossroads.sandler.com. Sandler Sales training, finding power in reinforcement. Let them show you how. Visit crossroads.sandler.com today.
And welcome back to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Vince Esposito. Vince and I have been talking about the last step in the Sandler system, which is the post-sell. It involves helping deal with buyer's remorse. How do I eliminate an incumbent coming back in and retaking the business after I've earned it? And I think one other step in this post-sell is what we call passing the baton. So if you can imagine a relay race, the point at which you stand the chance to win or lose is when you pass that baton from one runner to the next. Most of us who are in sales, once we've sold it, we're going to pass it to somebody else to fulfill what we've sold. And it's that passing of the baton that's so crucial. Vince, talk to us about how Sandler gives us tools and tactics to help make sure we don't drop the baton.
Some of the folks that I work with, they have some equipment that, you know, isn't just sitting on the shelf that you can, you know, grab off and say, okay, let's start tomorrow with it. And there's some timelines that have to be addressed. And I think after you've talked through some of those other issues that we addressed earlier in the earlier segments, this is the time to say, all right, let's set up the expectation. Because what you don't want to have done here is that, you know, your buyer thinks it's going to be 6 weeks and it's going to be more like 8 weeks before you can get the product there, because then obviously you're setting the tone with that client that the communication isn't open and now we've got some additional issues. And I think that's a real key to walk through those timelines and expectations from both you and from the buyer and what they need to do, because a lot of times they're not the ones, they have to pass the baton internally as well.
Right.
And their people in the plant or, you know, in the service area or the CFO or whoever is going to be handling some of the follow-up. And you need to make sure everybody's on the same page with that. Because what you don't want to get into is the fingers start flying around that we didn't know that.
Right. I think another part of really this step in the system is, as sales, I need to clearly document some of the boundaries and expectations that the client has. So I may need to tell my production team some specific things that maybe don't come up in the scope of work, but it's an important to understand about the client. Like, for example, one of those is, what is the basis upon which they will give us a referral? So talk to us a little bit about setting up that relationship.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and that's the other thing. In today's world, you know, it's harder and harder to prospect the traditional ways of cold calling and walking in. And I'm not suggesting you don't do that. But what I am saying is that it's awesome to augment your prospecting by bringing in as part of your post-sale to ask for referrals. And, you know, you've gone through a pretty lengthy process at this point, and if you've done a good job of developing the pain and understanding the budget, that buyer will have a pretty good sense that you're a trusted advisor and what you're looking for in a potential client.
Mm.
And now is the time to bring that up and kind of set the stage. You may, before you go in for that last call, get hooked up with them on LinkedIn and check out some of the people that they're connected with that you think could be a possibility. And I would suggest you have 5 to 10 names off their LinkedIn that you might be able to bring up and talk about. Because what you don't want to do is just be too broad and say, do you know anyone that could use my services?
Yeah.
I don't think that works well at all.
I think a broad statement like that almost always hooks a response that says, not right now, but if I think of someone, I'll sure introduce them to you, which is their intent,
yeah.
But it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, because you know, you're not specific enough, so you have to have a good understanding of what your best client profile looks like. Maybe, like I said, do a little research on your side before to say, here's some people that I when we were connecting on LinkedIn, I looked at that might fit. You got a few minutes, let's talk about them, and maybe you can give me some insight into their business and what they do, and then we can see if it might be a good fit.
And some of the words that you might use to help facilitate this conversation, I might say, for example, so, Vince, I can't remember, how did we meet? And then whatever Vince's answer is, whether he responded to an advertisement, found me, saw one of my vehicles in the field, or was introduced, I'm going to say, interesting, you know, most people come to us as by way of an introduction from friends, and then I move into what I call the referral trap, which is basically saying, the way I buy, Vince, is that I'm only going to endorse someone that I really trust. Is that the same for you? Of course, they're going to say yes. I'm going to respond with, I found that the only way to really validate how good a job my team does for my clients is my client's willingness to introduce me. So what I'd like to do is, if you're comfortable, reach out to you, say maybe in 30 days, and find out how are we doing, and based on how we're doing, how comfortable will you be in facilitating an introduction? So something like that can be just a very simple way to make sure you're planting that seed in your buyer's mind that their introductions are a vital part of your future business.
I like to set up that date a little bit out too, because once again, we want to be a trusted advisor, and it also gives us an opportunity to go in to evaluate how the service is going thus far and then see if those expectations we set if we're hitting those. And once again, that's another discussion that's not easy, but you'd rather know it now than to get blindsided by down the road.
Yeah.
That you didn't hit this, we never heard from your folks on this date,
right,
type of thing. If things are obviously hitting the mark, that's when you can have a much better discussion about referral business. And if not, you can use it as a time to really sit down and figure out what's going on.
Right, right. What do I need to do different? One of the statistics
right.
that we find in Sandler is that 20% of the people that you meet are going to give you a referral, whether they even do business with you or not, because it's in their nature. Another 20% will never give you a referral because, again, it's not in their nature. They don't want the referral to reflect poorly on them. The remaining 60%, they'll give a referral, but they don't know how. And or maybe they don't even know that you need it. So it's up to us as business development professionals to facilitate the training, the coaching, and making it easy. I loved what you said, Vince, about using LinkedIn. What are some other strategies to help make it easy for someone to provide you with a referral?
You know, what I mentioned earlier, too, about having a really good handle on what, you know, your best client profile looks like. So knowing, you know, we don't want to limit ourselves. We can do business on all sides of the spectrum. But as a Sandler trainer, I know that I can do Fortune 500 companies down to individuals that are on commission sales. But my sweet spot is that company that has 1 to 10 salespeople locally owned that they really see benefit in having a partner that can help them develop a process to be successful in sales and revenue generation. And so that's what I focus on first, because the other part of the referral is you want it to be a good experience, and you don't want to bring it in to someone that you can do, but it's going to be an outlier and there's going to be a little more discussion. And I think it's a lot of opportunity is left there, number one, to lose the sale, number two, to set the stage for the expectations and communication, and then three, to have the opportunity for referrals, which are the lifeblood of any company.
In that referral conversation, Vince, how would you help somebody open their database in your business in particular so that they would know, okay, so if I'm going to build a referral, find a referral for Vince, this is the kind of person I should look for.
Well, as I said, I've looked in my database, and I see out of my clients the type of company that I've had the longest relationship and the most success with. And as I said, they are a company that has $5 million to $20 million in revenue, 1 to 10 salespeople. And I get very specific as the type of person I'm looking for, because I want it to be a successful endeavor, especially if it's a referral. Because you said it earlier, a lot of people are gun-shy because they don't want to get in a situation where they refer somebody that doesn't work.
It's a great point. Vince, you've been a great guest today. I really appreciate the time you've spent helping us understand in more detail that post-sell step. Why don't you give the listeners your contact information in case somebody out there would like to reach out to you?
Sure. Once again, it's Vince Esposito. I can be reached at phone number 502-454-5454 in Louisville, Kentucky. My email is vesposito, E-S-P-O-S-I-T-O, at sandler.com. Or you can check our website at esposito.sandler.com.
Vince, great guest, and thank you so much for being a part of the show today. And you listeners, thank you for taking time out of your weekend to participate with us. If there's any subject you'd like to hear more about or you have any questions, you can reach out to me at area code 208-429 208-429-9275. That's Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. Or you can catch us on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. Have a great weekend.
Have you noticed that you can smell a salesperson a mile away? It's the smell of neediness and desperation. This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Listen to my client, Bethany Brediger, with Sonatrol Pacific, share her experience learning how to stop selling and become a trusted advisor.
Everything you teach is centered around not doing what the customer expects, that dance that you do back and forth that I was stuck doing and didn't like my job when I was having to do that, and changed my actual job description and the way that I interact with clients so much so that now I feel very proud of what I do, and I love going to work, and I don't feel like I'm getting caught in that dance anymore. I'm able to actually talk to people and they forget I'm a salesperson because of these techniques. They end up selling it themselves, and I feel like I'm not even selling.
Stop the buyer-seller dance and learn to love your career again. Call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275, or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com.